The question was asked, when we learn halakha, we encounter that sometimes within within a rabbinic institution, so the rabbis were lenient here, stringent there. Why didn't they just say, this is the institution and finished? So the truth is that there are many details to this question, but we'll try to address to some degree some aspects of it, and from there we'll extrapolate onwards, okay? Number one, there are times where Chazal made a blanket rule. There definitely are instances where they just gave a statement and then they said, this is the rabbinic institution. Let's see, the rabbi said you have to light Hanukkah candles. You have to light Hanukkah candles. The rabbi said on Shabbos you're not supposed to hold a pen or carry things that are mukta on Shabbos. So okay, we don't do that. But within the institutions, there was always the calculation of how common, how often does this come up? And in areas where this comes up, where we can anticipate it's going to happen frequently, and there's a need for a leniency, so then often the rabbis would say, okay, over here, we're going to factor in the need. So if Chazal forbade muktzeh, they said, tzorech gufo and tzorech mekomo is mutter. If a person left, he left his pen on the bed, so it's a klishim lachtolisr, you use a pen to write, so there's no real use for it on Shabbos. It's a vessel, it's not like something that has no use, but its usage is not on Shabbos. So then if you want to go to sleep, you can pick up that pen and put it somewhere else. So Chazal said, generally, you don't move muktzeh, but because we understand it's going to happen, people will come to their Shabbos table and suddenly notice that they left their wallet there or something else that's muktzeh, so I need to eat here now. Tzorach mekomo, I need its place, I'm allowed to move it. So Chazal, when they made institutions, part of the calculation in making an institution is where Chazal wanted to give us an out. And part of it is that Chazal were very understanding of people. So we have a rule, bimkom tsa'ar lo gazru rabbanan. If it's an area of pain, so then Chazal didn't make most of their institutions don't involve pain. And if it'll involve pain, so Chazal say, I wasn't talking about such an instance. Again, the application is a little bit more detailed than the general way I'm saying it. But as a general approach, Chazal did give us that understanding within their institutions. Yes?
What is like the backing of like these rules? Like, are they like if you do like muksa like in public, do you get like chayrim? What is?
You mean what is the enforcing power?
Yeah.
So Chazal have at their disposal the tool of makas mardus, meaning if a person is going to disregard what a rabbinic institution, so then the court can hit him, can beat him. That's called makas mardus. The court can put him in cheirim, nidui cheirim. When you apply which is a broad discussion, you can be found in the beginning of Hilchos Yom Tov. In the beginning of Hilchos Yom Tov, we have a discussion of the rabbinic institutions and their punishment. The rabbis could curse him, saying there were different tools, depending on what had happened, which tool the rabbis would use. The first choice is to explain to the guy, you're not supposed to do this. You're talking about an instance where he says, I don't care, I'm doing what I want. So there, the rabbis, if he's going to corner them, then they might use one aspect of force or another. So the first point is Chazal have not only a license but a responsibility from Torah of asusiag la Torah to establish fence, to establish institutions. Chazal established institutions also for the economy. There were all kinds of institutions. Their job was to run the society. And when they made these institutions, they also factored in the needs of the people. So sometimes they were lenient to help the people, and sometimes they were stringent because they knew that if they opened this valve, so then the whole dam would go. They would lose everything they were trying to protect. So this was part of what Chazal factored in, and that was their job to factor in. I would add one more point, which is not directly what you asked, but it's an important point. This idea of understanding the circumstance has relevance to the rulings of a court. As the Tosefta in Sanhedrin says, that sometimes the court has to give a certain ruling, not because the law demands it, as much as the times demand it. Where the courts have to factor what's happening, what's with the times right now. There was a shul where they tried to push the shul away from being observant and orthodox. So then they fought tooth and nail for every detail of every custom, because when the times are such that your tradition is being threatened, so then you can't give an inch. Then you have a shul that everything's common, everything's okay. So then you start factoring, okay, does this actually have to be this way, or can we modify it a little bit? There's room to discuss where halacha gives me room for modification. At times where you're being threatened, so you have to stand your ground. At times where there are no threats, so then you say, wait a second, technically, halachically, it's kosher to do it differently. We don't have to do it exactly this way, we can also do it that way. So there are many examples to that. But this idea also applies on an individual basis. When a person asks a shaila, so it's not just the rabbinic institutions that factored in a person's personal level. Part of what we factor in when we study halacha, we try to understand the spectrum of what's permissible and prohibited. And within that spectrum, we are given a certain range where the rabbi who answers the question is also supposed to, he's responsible to factor in where that person is holding. And that's a part of what we have to understand. I once got a shaila by SMS. I could tell you the shaila. The woman asked, she's going to dunk in the mikvah. And ordinarily when women prepare to go to the mikvah, they cleanse themselves of anything that they have on them, including any nail polish, including any dirt. They spend a good 45 minutes to an hour cleansing themselves, preparing to go into the mikvah. And she said she hadn't realized, and she has a, I don't know if it's called manicure, pedicure, she had to have her nails done in a really fancy way, and she had the appointment for the afternoon of the mikvah. So is that okay, or should she postpone it? I don't know who's asking me the shaila. But when someone asks me a shaila by SMS, so I know that the halacha says that our custom is that we don't go with anything on. We cleanse off any nail polish, we clean off everything. But it's also true that technically, halachically, if a woman has nail polish that she wants on, or she dyes her hair and she wants that color there, so technically it is permissible. Her dunking in the mikveh is kosher because that's considered a part of her body that she wants there.
She's dead?
What?
Aren't the nails dead? So
no, that we don't factor in. I'm saying, technically, if a woman would say, if a woman is in the process of doing tshuva and she says, I need to dunk with my nail polish, so we wouldn't fight her on it. We would say, okay, you have what to rely on. So I went to one of my rabbeim and I said, when a woman sends an SMS like this, how am I supposed to understand it? Am I supposed to understand this person doesn't have a rabbi and they're maybe just starting to be observant and maybe I should go the lenient route and say, it's preferable not to, but it's if you do it, it's also kosher. Or should I tell her, no, the custom of the Jewish women is that we don't do it. How do you view it? So part of what we learn when we're students of rabbinics is we also learn how to listen to a question and factor in the needs of the person who's asking the question. It was interesting that my teacher said to me, no, she asked you a question. So you don't start factoring in where is she holding religiously. She asked you. So then the answer is, our custom is that women don't do that. Technically, if she did it as a kosher, yes. But she asked you. And if she asked you, then you have to answer in accordance with our custom. You don't go saying, well, there are times where we turn a blind eye because technically it's kosher.
Do you answer fully, though? Say, it's our custom that we don't do it, but but technically it's kosher.
No, they said don't end there. That's not fair.
Then of her not going at all.
So they said no, right? That's where I thought. Right. And they said no. When a person asks you a question, then your job is to answer them. Our custom is that we don't. Okay. It's true that if a woman would show up to the mikveh with nail polish on, so then our custom is not to say anything. Because we don't know who she is, we don't know where she's coming from, we don't say anything.
Because when we say it's our custom, it's our minhag, it's like someone who knows you shouldn't might take it as you can, and someone who is holy, but they don't know that a minhag doesn't necessarily have a strong.
Okay, you would write maybe we don't do that. We don't go to the mikveh with nail polish.
Yeah.
I'm saying we don't do it. Right. It's true that we don't do it. It's also true that if a woman comes and comes with nail polish, we won't fight her on it.
Right.
We'll turn a blind eye and say fine.
She's been to the mikveh.
Right. We don't. I'm saying, but this idea that in rabbinic institutions we factor in the needs of the people, and this was part of the institution. So then it's also true on the individual basis.
Such a great example, because the danger of saying it would be okay.